I believe in aliens. I believe that they exist. I believe in aliens. If you don't believe, I'll stop you in the face today. If you don't believe, I'll stop you in the face. I believe in aliens. I believe in aliens.
Welcome to the Story Time Podcast with Brandon
one
and Dave.
One R.
What?
I said one R.
Hey, yeah, one Dave, one of the questions we've been getting, welcome to the Story Time, by the way. One of the questions we've been getting a lot of, and we kind of need to address it, is our intro song. People hate it.
Okay. It's staying.
I don't know why people are even listening to us.
Okay, here's the thing. Me and Bran have more adventures in our lives outside of just this podcast. I don't know what people think that we just, this is it.
Yeah.
We didn't just meet on the podcast and a friend. We have life outside of the podcast.
We have a past.
We have a past. We were neighbors. Yeah, sure, we live hundreds of miles apart now, but we lived but maybe six, seven houses apart at one point for many years. Probably actually the majority of my life.
Yeah.
At this point.
Like, I think that's fair.
I think of all the places I've lived, that's obviously the one I've lived the longest. And for the majority of the time that I was living there, especially of that I could actually remember, is that we were neighbors.
And we didn't really talk about UFOs much.
No, we...
Well, I guess kind of.
We did, actually. Probably more than the average.
That's true.
I mean, we don't talk about as much as we do now, but I think that the standard should be, you know, normal people, and we were already.
I mean, need I bring back the memory of us staying up all night watching the solar eclipse while listening to Coast to Coast?
Right. And also, remember that time that we wanted to make our own UFO because we heard about the kid.
That's true. And then, the balloon boy.
And then do you remember when we saw the balloon and the lady walked up and was explaining to us about UFOs?
Yes.
That was a good time.
This story doesn't make any sense to anyone else. We had an idea we wanted to prank the world.
I don't know if we were going for the world. We were at least going for Titusville.
Yeah, we were trying to prank. Like, we were trying to get on a local news, and we were hoping that we could lift up a bunch of balloons and let them go in the air, and take like a UFO video type thing, and send it into the news and get on the news and stuff like that. Blah 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 blah. So yeah, I guess we have kind of had a weird fascination.
Wait, actually, we did release that balloon. That was. Whose birthday balloon was it? It was a big one.
Yeah, I don't know, someone's.
I don't even remember if it was birthday necessarily. But anyways, it was a big old balloon. We released it, and that's the balloon that we were pointing out to that lady to see what she would say.
That's right.
And she just was like, well, don't you know?
Right, because NASA, like she was talking about how NASA has all these weird crafts come in and blah, blah, blah. Don't you know, guys? This is not a joke.
So, we didn't tell her. We just let it be what it was.
So all that to say, that's when we recorded the intro song.
In that time frame,
yeah.
Yes.
So we recorded. I mean, you can tell it.
I mean, I'm not going to make it specific. I'm just going to say we had another friend that wanted to do his own little kind of like show thing. And in that show.
And it was awful.
It was the worst. And he only did one episode.
Yeah.
But. We were the guests on that show, and I was the equivalent of like the band, the backing band that you will have on the late night shows.
The Roots, if you will.
The Roots. That's a great example. And so I was just making up stuff, and Brandon was being interviewed, and we, of course, because we love aliens, that came up, and then that song was nothing but a beautiful improv moment.
Yep. So true. So that's that song. It has meaning to us. We might change it. I don't know.
I mean, just like we might change it to the correct spelling of Starry.
No, that's not happening.
Okay. So,
I will die on that hill.
So that's that one you want more. I was going to say that neither of them will change, but that one's even more so not going
to
change.
I mean, I could do without the song. I fast forward the song when I'm listening to the podcast.
Well, it's only I hit that 15-second
yeah,
button.
Yeah, exactly.
That's, it's exactly the link that you need to get right past it.
It is the key. Hey, Dave, I don't want to just blow past this. Good old Dr. Michael Heiser tweeted and Facebooked out our interview, and a lot of our listeners that may be listening today are because of that. So welcome to the Starry Time for those of you that were just here for Michael Heiser and are now like, I guess I accidentally subscribed. Thank you for subscribing, first of all.
That's how they get you.
Yeah, that is how they get you. And today we're really excited. We're going to be talking about Bigfoot, very different than last week, but just as interesting. But if you guys could do us a huge favor, if you are a long-time listener, and by long-time I mean three episodes, or just a one-time listener, whatever it is, do us a big favor on the iTunes. Hit the subscribe, and then when you're doing that, leave us a little a note and a rating, 5 stars preferably, unlike the guy who said nothing but kind things in the review but gave us 4 stars. I don't understand. Like, what do you want?
Some people they want to leave. It's like a teacher that gives out B's, even though he loves what it is that he gave a B. It's just so that he's able to give an A to someone that,
like
that gets
the old, there's no such thing as a 100 thing.
Right. It's an old one. It's an old one of those things.
But there is such thing as a 100. It's called the Starry Time Podcast.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So, there's at least 100 stars in the sky that that should count for us.
So, I mean, here's the thing, guys. When you guys search on iTunes for a paranormal podcast or UFO podcast, we don't even break the 100. We don't even break it. And the only way that we break it is with the reviews and the ratings, high ones preferably. So do it for us, if you don't mind. And then after that, you can unsubscribe. I don't care. We're really just in it for the likes and the making us feel better about ourselves.
It's a self-esteem podcast.
It is, really. I mean, yeah, more or less. Does anyone go into the podcast business without that?
Some people have so much self-esteem that they just – that this is like an outlet for it. But for us, this is like an inlet where we accept self-esteem. So some people pour out. We are accepting.
Hey, Dave, one thing – we listen to a lot of podcasts. One thing that people always do, like to start the podcast or whatever, is they always go like, you can donate to our podcast. Should we do that?
No.
You don't think so?
No. I heard this is the best one I've heard so far. It was today. I was listening to a podcast called Modern Fingerstyle Podcast, which is one of my favorites.
Sure.
Where they interview different fingerstyle guitarists. And the guy.
I understand what you mean by no.
Yes, yes, yes. And so the guy at the beginning of the podcast said, hey, so I've been trying to think of a way to do what everybody does and like just to pay for the little expenses that go into making the podcast and stuff, and what he decided to do is he went to his closet and he found the most comfortable shirt that he had. He found out who made it, and then he decided to have shirts made for the podcast, and then he would sell them on the website.
Oh.
Is that it? See, because then it's like not only when you donate, you don't just continue listening to the podcast, you still get even something else that will help promote the podcast.
Yeah, but part of what that does also is it forces me to spend more money.
But think about this, Brand. Can you imagine our logo on a t-shirt? And isn't it great?
That would be the worst.
Steve would be proud.
Hey, we tried to get Steve on the podcast. I mean, I guess I could try to call up Steve real quick.
I mean,
I'll see. Maybe we can get him at the end of the podcast. But I wanted to do a quick interview with him. About the making of the graphic, because he honestly did put in a lot of work, a few days worth of work into it, and I wanted to get he's an artist, struggling artist in New York City, and just kind of wanted to get his take on the art and also the news, because you're about to hear Dave. I mean, you're about to hear Steve. I'm sorry, Dave. Listen.
Mm-hmm.
But we're about to hear Steve do the news, Lord willing. He showed up last week? Did a great. Listen, when you're an artist. Sometimes things come up. You can't quench the fire, and so we let him pass in week two. We let him pass in week two, but he was back for week three, and it was a great job.
And he did a great job. In fact, I would say that that was his strongest one so far. Wouldn't you say?
Oh, I thought so. I thought it was all really good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he really he produced good content on this one.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to more of that this week.
So maybe we'll get to talk to him.
College football starts this week.
Oh, yeah. What, the first game was Thursday night. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I'm going to be watching UCF play from the UCF alumni bar. But let me tell you this.
There's a UCF alumni bar in New York City?
Bran, there's an alumni bar for every college in New York City.
Wow. Is the UCF alumni bar nice?
I haven't been to it yet, but I've heard good things.
Okay.
But I'll report back next time. But good. I'll say the only thing that I'm more excited about than that is this week's Starry Time podcast.
That's exactly, man. We've got, well, I'm also excited about what happens after the news. We have two guys from the Bigfoot's Pad Paranormal, Brent and Jeremy. They joined us. It's wonderful. It's a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
This is the first time where me and Brian are, we don't outnumber the guests. We are on equal ground. So I feel like it's a fair conversation.
Absolutely. Like, and we talk about Bigfoot. We also get a little bit towards the end of the podcast into, some alien sightings and also a very exciting Men in Black situation,
experience.
Which is,
yeah,
man, it's everything that you could hope it would be and more. So just know that's coming up.
Exactly. You said it best. I'll leave it at that.
Thank you so much. Hey, Dave, what do you say? We kick it to the news with Steve. We come back. We talk to those guys. What do you say?
Steve, 2, 1.
For Storytime News, this is Steven. Seth Shostak of SETI joins the growing ranks of those disenchanted with the stagnant evidence pool of UFOs and alien visitation, stating that his own research has turned up the unsurprising conclusion that the bulk of important UFO cases occurred in the first half of the past 76 years since the dawn of the modern UFO era in the 1940s. Shostak thinks it's possible our alien visitors are simply done with us and have packed up their probes and left the galaxy. I sure hope not. Also in the news, a Russian schoolboy claims he may have found evidence of a Yeti. A boy and his father ran across a muddy bank on a Siberian river where they found a single foot track from a Yeti. Is it true a schoolboy has found evidence of a Yeti? Like most news headlines, the answer is no. And finally in the news, is it true that dreams deliver clues to better health? Dreams have been studied by Jungian therapist Tyria Ward and those of Robert Gongloff. They state that dreams are trying to tell us something, from hidden desires to health warnings, and that there is little separation between dreaming and waking worlds. For Starry Time News, this is Steven.
All right, we are back here on the one, the only Starry Time podcast. Dave, are you excited?
Words can't do it for me, Bran, to say how excited I am this time.
Yeah, Dave, what are we, before we kick it to our guests, what are we talking about today?
He goes by many names. Bigfoot.
Okay, Sasquatch. So you'll
the
go with that one.
Snowman in the snowy regions. Yeah,
Well, that's a good question. I wonder if it's the same being. Anyways, we've got a group today, not just a person, but we got a group. The Bigfoot's Pad Paranormal Team is an ongoing paranormal research team from Las Vegas, and they've been doing this since 2003. The team originally began as an online research group and branched into field investigations. Bigfoot's Pad is a groundbreaking team that does field work and a ton of different things, but today we're going to be talking about Bigfoot, and they've been working for years to investigate and provide evidence about the supernatural. And we have with us from the team Brent McDonald and Jeremy Metter. Hey guys, how you doing tonight?
Pretty good.
Doing all right.
There we are. So just so that everyone knows whose voice is whose, Brent, say hello.
Hello.
And Jeremy, say hello.
Hey, hey.
Very good.
We
guys.
We have two guests.
Yeah,
so
this is a new thing for us.
Figuring out how to do it.
Guys, tell us about the research. I know we kind of talked about it a little bit till it started in 03, but tell us a little bit about the research, what you guys do. Is it a full-time gig? All that good stuff. What is the Bigfoot's Pad?
Okay. Well, our paranormal group, the Bigfoot's Pad, we started out around 2003 as an online group, kind of like a research forum. And our group, we've always kept our group small, never more than four people. It's me, my brother, Brent, and our other friend, Nick. We do all kinds of investigations. Like, we do ghost hunts. We do a lot of monster hunts, like the one we're talking about tonight. A lot of UFO material. We do short films. We actually had our own radio show for a while, and then we haven't done that for about a year. But we had our own radio show for a while, and we've traveled pretty much from coast to coast. But in October, we're actually supposed to go up to Northern Nevada to start filming for a UFO crash documentary that goes along with a book that I'm writing. And we'll get into that in a little bit later.
Yeah.
But awesome. That pretty much sums up like the majority of what we've been up to the last 10 years.
So what is a hunt? Like what it goes into? Like how do you prepare for one? What it goes into and what kind of makes a hunt make it be what it is?
Well, I guess it depends on what you're looking for. Like, I guess for Bigfoot, in this case, I guess we just start off with pre-planning on where we want to go and how we want to go about it, what we're going to bring as in equipment and electronics, and I guess where we're going to stay so we can, like, I guess make a, not really a plan of attack, but just a plan to where we know where we're going to go and, supposedly see a Bigfoot, or at least try to see one.
Right. We wanted to talk to you guys tonight about Bigfoot because I think a lot of people look at UFOs, a lot of people go at the ghost, but not many people study Bigfoot. So what made you guys decide, let's give Bigfoot a try?
Actually, my mom, of all people, she actually had a really scary encounter with a Bigfoot in the 70s. She
really?
Was actually chased by something in the middle of the night with her friend, probably about a half a mile.
What were they doing? Through. Were they?
Apparently, it was in the middle of the night, and my mom was with her friend, and I guess they lived, both of them lived at the top of a hill.
Okay.
They had to walk down to the bottom of this hill in Southern California. And their friend lived at the other side. I guess the best way to explain it is there's two hills with a ditch or a gully in between the two big mountains or hills, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, gotcha, yeah.
And they were traveling from one mountain to the other. And when they were in between in that ditch area, that gully, she said that all of a sudden they started smelling something that sounded like rotting meat or like a dirty animal.
Huh.
And it was dark at this time or getting dark. And they were looking around. And my mom said all of a sudden they heard what sounded like a snorting sound or a grunt. And she said they looked over, I guess, in whatever direction they both looked at, and something was walking around in these big, tall weeds. It was like a bunch of weeds. And whatever this thing was, it stood up on both legs. And when it stood up, my mom said that this thing was huge.
Yeah.
It looked almost like a gorilla or a guy that was in really good shape, like a bodybuilder or something, stood up. And my mom said that she remembers it had yellow, red-looking eyes. And whatever this thing was, it took off. My mom said she took off running, but her friend was so scared with fright that she was standing in one spot. And my mom said she had to stop running, go back, grab her friend, and take off running again. And this thing was right on their heels. She said most of the time it was running, it was going back and forth between running on two legs and running on all fours. And whatever this thing was, my mom, it was catching up to my mom and her friend. And my mom was saying that they found the only house that was in that ditch. Nobody was home. I guess all the lights were out and the house was dark. But my mom said they ran and jumped over their wall.
Huh.
And they had two dogs that were barking and going crazy. And they had, I guess called motion sensor lights were lighting up all around the house. And this thing was pacing around the house.
Oh, gosh.
And my mom said it scared the crap out of her.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
And my mom said the thing occasionally would stand up on two legs and would look over the wall at him and show its teeth like it was like trying to like scare him or trying to get at him or something.
But it couldn't climb the wall.
My mom said it probably could have if it wanted, but
it was just kind of taunting him or like not
taunting him or trying to intimidate him. But my mom said that this thing was pacing around the house until, I guess, a couple hours later, like an hour or two later, those people came home. And when they came home, this creature ran off. And when the people came home, they apparently they looked in their backyard because they heard all the dogs going crazy and all that. And I guess they ended up calling my grandpa and telling him that my mom and her friend were in their backyard. And when my grandpa showed up, they started telling him that that creature hangs out around their house all the time. And that's why they got the dogs. What? And that's why they got the motion sensor lights.
Oh, that's wow. Wild. Those, because of it.
Yeah.
So that two questions really quick. And then, Brian, maybe you can see if one of, maybe this is one of the ones you had anyway. You mentioned earlier a Sasquatch, not the Sasquatch. And so one question I was wondering is this, is Sasquatch or is Bigfoot one thing, or is it a species that is different places?
We usually go along with it's a species. Okay. Like there's a famous cryptozoologist, Lauren Coleman, and he actually says that he predicts that in North America alone that there's about 2,500 to 3,000 of these creatures.
Wow.
Can you go real quick? You said cryptozoology. What is it?
Cryptozoology.
What is that?
It's looking for unknown animals, okay, or animals that are not supposed to be in certain places that, gotcha, are in a different place, or animals that are extinct.
That word makes sense now. Good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Go so ahead. This is the follow up. So that being said, this is this family had a common. It was common for them to see this creature. It was at least enough to where they had to get the security. So is that like example of a place that you guys would go to look for one, is where you hear that there's a lot of reports of people seeing a certain one, and then you guys go see if you can see it and attract it or something?
We try that, but we also we try to go to locations that are so far out in the middle of nowhere that you know that there's no other people to mess with you. Or people trying to hoax things.
Uh-huh.
Like the, oh, okay, the main area that we go to, and the main area that we go to in Northern California, it's 60 miles, like 60 miles from the nearest town. And most of the 60 miles, like 40 of it's on dirt roads. Wow. So you know that there's no one out there messing around with you. Yeah. Like, so I don't, like some guy wouldn't be putting on a monkey suit hoping that someone would drive by out there.
Right.
I want to
spend just a little bit longer on the story. Like, your mom tells this amazing story. Is your mom somebody who, prior to this, believed in the fantastic, something crazy like that? Or was she kind of – was this just the first thing that kind of spiked that interest?
That actually sparked her interest. And when I was little and she used to tell us the story about this, that's the thing that sparked my interest personally. I don't know what sparked Brent's interest in that, but
yeah, Brent, tell us what kind of got you into thinking about the Sasquatch.
Well, I didn't really think about it that much until, I mean, when I was a kid, like I only had one paranormal experience, and that's kind of what got me into the supernatural pretty much. And like after I don't know if you want me to tell the story about that.
Yeah, go for it. What happened? Why not?
Okay. I guess what got me into the whole paranormal was when I was maybe 10 or 11. I was living in Southern California with my parents, obviously. But anyways, one night I was going to sleep, you know, next day I had school. So I usually left the hall light on and my door open so I could, because I was afraid of the dark at the time. So I just did that, just a precaution, I guess you could say. And I went to sleep and I woke up and I was really cold and I thought my mom was standing at the doorway of my room, just leaning. There was like a figure pretty much, like a dark figure standing in my doorway and just leaning up against it and looking at me. And I thought it was my mom at first, but my mom's only 5 foot and this thing was nearly as tall as my dad, which he's maybe like 6'2". So It couldn't have been both of them because or either one because mm-hmm. It had long flowing hair and it was just pitch black and all I could see was the hair and I could just feel the presence of it staring at me. So then I just, you know, said, well, I'm just going to go back to sleep and pretend like it never happened. And then the next day I told my parents about it and they come to me and say, oh yeah, well, the previous owner of the house, their wife died in your room.
Oh wow!
Oh Lord!
Yeah,
that's a
yeah.
Surprise.
She died of I don't know what she died of. I think she died of cancer, I think, and that I was just like, oh, okay, well, I guess that would explain. And
that's when I switch rooms right there.
Yeah, I wish I could.
I would switch houses. Maybe neighborhoods.
And then they come up and – oh, sorry about that.
No. Finish your story. I want to hear it.
Okay, well, my dad contacted the previous owner, and he emailed my dad a picture of his wife, and it was – it wasn't – I wouldn't say – I couldn't see any facial features or anything, but she was tall, and it was like if she was all blacked out, it would be her. Pretty much.
Right. Wow. Interesting. That's wild. So what do you think? So I guess ghost, I'm assuming?
Yes.
Crazy. Did you ever see it again or?
After that instant, no, I did not. Not in that same house.
What about like any other ghosts in general besides her? Have you ever had any other ghost encounters?
Not that I could think of at the top of my head.
Gotcha.
Well, but this is another thing, because you guys said that it's a paranormal group, like this the Sasquatch is, or the Bigfoot. But this is not necessarily, it's an actual species that's physically a thing. It's not like a ghost, right?
Yes.
And so, I guess, there's the difference would be, I guess, that like with the ghost encounters, when you're searching for a ghost, you're looking for something that's not even a physical species, versus when you're looking for a Bigfoot, or I guess even aliens, those are actually in this dimension, or they're actually physically in here. So that would almost like present two different kinds of issues. One, in that you can even pick up something like a ghost. I know that's kind of a huge part of planning those trips and stuff, and what people, me and Brandon, have talked about is if having devices that can pick up a ghost. But with a Bigfoot, that's something that you should be able to just pick up with, you know, regular cameras, or do you guys have special equipment to try and capture the evidence?
We actually have like a whole arsenal of equipment actually, it's kind of hard because you have to have like a whole batch of equipment to do ghost hunting, a batch of equipment to do we have trail cameras where you strap them on the tree and then they take pictures when an animal walks by or if it senses. But we have those in video and still image format. We have night vision cameras. We have regular camcorders with just like a regular light on it. We have spotlights. We use different types of motion sensors. We've tried baiting before, which is kind of dangerous, but you don't want to do that. It's close to where you're camping, but try baiting before. You do something called call blasting, which is where you play a supposed Bigfoot call, and you're hoping that call will draw in more Bigfoot creatures. There's a whole I think I might actually have one on the computer I could try to send you guys.
Huh. Oh, that would be great. We could include it. That's awesome. But what else were you going to say?
We've actually had pretty good luck with using most of those methods. I don't know if you want us to get into that right now or.
Right, that's exactly what I was hoping we could get into, is kind of what you guys have encountered doing this.
Well, I guess the best way to break that down is we would have to break it down into specific areas. We mainly go to Northern California, but we've also gone to Colorado, Idaho, Northern Nevada, Oregon. Sorry, I was trying to think about the name. But our main spot that we go to in Northern California, on two occasions we actually had what I would call a close encounter. We actually saw one on one occasion at very close distance, and on the other occasion something was just out of eyesight, but you could hear it moving and you could see that it was. Obviously, they didn't want us there. It started to like throw rocks and sticks and things like that at us.
Yeah.
Whoa.
That's crazy.
See, that's Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say that's what scares me. Like, I would be much more willing to go on a ghost hunt than a Bigfoot hunt, just because I would be a little more scared of getting hurt in a Bigfoot.
Really?
Hunt.
No, I'd be all about a Bigfoot hunt, man. Like, ghost hunts weird to me.
That's what separates us. You're all about the Bigfoot. I'm more of a ghost guy. I would feel comfortable with a ghost going at me than with a Bigfoot. I don't know.
That's the weirdest.
Okay, well, continue.
Anyways, carry on.
Well, In 2008, this was the specific, I guess, the Holy Grail encounter we had. This location, like I said, to get there, you have to drive about 25 miles on a paved road, and you turn off of the main road onto a one single lane deserted road, I guess you call it. It's unmaintained road. Uh-huh. Then from there, it turns into a dirt road, and then it goes all the way out to where we go. But this location, it's shaped in a triangle. There's three streams and three lakes that surround this location. And we were staying out there for about a week, and we set up all of our cameras, like I said, the still image and the motion cameras where it'll detect if something's walking by. And I guess we were doing call blasting, which is, like I said, where you play the Bigfoot calls, trying to call in other creatures to come towards you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We were doing that all day long, off and on. And then around, I'd say, 5 or 6 o'clock, we started to hear, when the sun started going down out there, we started hearing what sounded like a chirping sound or a whistling sound coming from one of these creeks close to camp. And this creek or this area it was coming from is literally about 20 steps from where we were sitting at the time. And it was getting dark enough to where we could use our spotlights, and you could see them pretty well. We had one of our guys had a lantern to light up the immediate area, and then me and Brent had our spotlights out. But you're hearing this chirping sound, and all of a sudden the whole entire forest got completely silent. Like, you couldn't hear any crickets, no birds, no nothing. You just heard the creek, and you heard this whistling. I call it a chirp, but it's kind of like a mixture of the two. We're hearing this chirping, whistling sound, and all of a sudden, all the hair on your neck and your arms stood up. Like, you knew something wasn't right.
Sure.
And just before that, you could hear, like, birds, and you could hear, like, crickets and things. It was weird. You could hear yourself breathe. It got so quiet. And all of a sudden, we started hearing footsteps coming from that direction, coming towards us. And what was weird is we were sitting there wondering, like, something didn't seem like it was right. And then all of a sudden, we started hearing footsteps coming from our other direction and then our other side. So three out of the four sides of us had footsteps, like, coming towards us. Like, something was trying to corral us or make us go in a specific direction.
Mm-hmm.
And there was three of us, and all four of us didn't go on this specific outing, but there was three of us, and we started feeling like something was going to attack us, or something wasn't right. Like I said, we're trying to be corralled in a specific area, and there's no quick getaway in this area, by the way. If you had to get out real quick, there's no way you could get out of there.
Oh gosh.
But we're starting to be corralled towards where our car's at, away from where we were camping at. We're being corralled towards the car. And I don't know if you guys have been to the Redwood Forest before, but it gets dark around 4 o'clock, like pitch black, because the trees are so tall it blocks out the sun.
Okay.
So it was about 5 or 6 o'clock is when this all started happening. And we could hear the footsteps coming towards us. And whatever the things were, they're trying to corral us. And while this is all happening, you could hear that chirping sound down in that creek still. And suddenly, I thought I saw movement at this one bush. Like, it looked like it was moving or shaking. So me and Brent turned our spotlights on that specific area where the bush was moving. And, of course, when the lights hit it, the bush was shaking like something. I just touched it, but there was no animal there.
Yeah.
And we're focusing our attention off to our left side. We're all focusing our attention over there. And whatever creature was shining where we shined our lights on the left, whatever creature was standing there, walked through the woods and came out on our right side. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw something moving. So I turned around, and my spotlight hit this creature.
Oh, wow.
It looked like almost like a man. I guess the best I'd call it looked like a monkey's body with a man's face, a man's hand, and man's feet.
Wow,
there was no hair on the feet, the hands, and the face.
How tall? But,
I'd say about 6 feet tall. It wasn't real big. I was picturing some big, burly-looking thing. It was actually looked like the size of an average man. It didn't look like it was in, like, super good physical shape. It looked like it was just like a a regular guy that doesn't really work out all that often.
And you said it didn't have any hair on its face?
The face didn't have any hair on it, neither did the hands or the feet.
That's really interesting. But
what was weird, though, was, okay, so this creature's crossing the – I guess the best way to explain it is it walked through our camping area – between our camping area and the road we drove there on, there's a little patch of woods. It walked through that patch of woods, and that's where our car was parked. And it came out in that patch, like I said, because there's no trees, obviously, because that's where the road's at.
Right.
And that's when my spotlight hit the creature, whatever it was. When the light hit it, it took off running. It cleared this road in about 2 steps.
Wow.
And it, whatever it was, scared it. I remember it had yellow eyes when the light hit it. You could see the reflection from its eyes.
Just like your mom's story.
Yeah. Whatever it was, it cleared the road in about 2 steps, and then it jumped. It jumped almost as high as, like, as tall as me, like really high into the air, and it leaped into the woods. But what was weird about it is you couldn't hear any footsteps. Like, whatever this creature, it didn't run away. It was just jumped in. I don't know if it jumped into the trees or jumped onto the into like the bushes or what. But we couldn't find it.
You want to
say before we go further? I'll have Brent say what he saw.
Oh, well, pretty much after it crossed the road, as Jeremy we were hearing the movement in the bushes, and then as it crossed the road, I turned to Jeremy, and Jeremy's just staring off into the, like, down the road pretty much where it was crossing. And I'm just like, Jeremy, what's going on? And I look, and then as soon as I, like, that half second that I turned to look at the road, I see it. I didn't get a full view picture as Jeremy did, but as soon as it was going into the trees, I could see, like, the back leg and the arm as it just leaps into the tree line pretty much.
Yeah.
Were you guys scared?
And actually, I started almost hyperventilating when I first saw it because this was actually our first Bigfoot trip, too, of all times.
Oh, okay.
But so anyways, I was telling you, this thing leaped into the woods or into the tree line, whatever you want to call it. But these woods are so thick, you can't even see about what 10 feet into the woods, Brent.
Yeah.
And It scared me so bad that I didn't want to move. I was almost frozen with fear for a minute there. So then we actually decided to go looking for the creature. We actually started poking around in the bushes and things, and we couldn't find it. And like I said, you couldn't hear any twigs snap or no footprint or I don't know what I call it, feet running on the ground. Like when you walk on the ground, obviously you're going to hear crunches of leaves and things like that. But there was none of that. Like whatever, I almost wonder if it jumped into the trees because we never looked up the trees. We were looking on the ground. It might have been up above us looking down on us. We also got to imagine while all this is going on, you could hear footsteps coming from the other two sides of us while all this is going on. Like you could tell that's more of whatever these things were coming towards us.
Yeah, sure.
So we left.
Oh, gosh.
We left the area for about an hour or two. But that's something I forgot to tell you. It takes about 2 hours to get to town from there.
Okay.
So we drove the 2 hours to town so I could collect myself. And then we came back. And again, like I said, the whole entire area was completely silent. Like whatever that thing was, I don't know if it was still in the area or what. But it was still completely silent. And we didn't see anything the rest of the night. The next morning, we came back to the area. And I was being kind of a chicken. I didn't want to stay out there that night, obviously, because it scared me. I still have nightmares about it to this day.
But I would too.
The creature scared me so bad, I demanded to stay in a hotel in town, so we drove to town. But we kept our tent in the area with some of our camping supplies. And when we came back the next morning, there was we were looking around at the ground and everything for footprints. We found one single footprint right in front of the zipper to get into the tent, and it looked like a man's footprint, but extra large. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
the way,
sure.
Right.
We found what you would consider a Bigfoot footprint. Yeah, a Bigfoot. But there was one footprint, and directly in front of our tent, like wherever, whatever this creature was walking around in the area right where we had seen it the night before.
Sure.
I don't know if it was walking around when we were there or if it was after we left, but whatever it was walking around that tent.
Did you take a picture of the print by any chance?
Yeah, we do.
Could you send me it?
Yeah.
I'd love to show it all on the website when we post your interview. That'd be great.
Okay, it might take a minute because I might have to get it from my brother.
That's fine.
I gotta text him real quick.
Let me ask you this. You, there was no hair on the face or the hands or the feet. What color was the face?
The face was white, almost like a...
Really?
Like an eerie type of... Almost looked like a tannish white color.
Interesting. And so what do you think it is exactly? Is it just like evolution gone wrong, or what in the world do you think it is?
I personally think it's some kind of an undiscovered animal or something that might have evolved quicker than the average forest animal that we don't know about, is my personal opinion. What do you think, Brent?
Yeah, that's exactly how I feel.
Is there any other animal characteristics besides the monkey and the human? Is there other animals that could possibly be a part of it?
A lot of people say that when there's Bigfoot sightings, the skeptics try saying, "Oh, well, how do you know this wasn't a bear?" Or how do you know that this wasn't a like a bobcat or something? There's no way, absolutely no way that could have been a bear or a bobcat. This thing, like I said, even Brent got like a good side profile view of it for at least a second while it was jumping. And like I said, bears don't jump like that. And whatever this thing was, like I said, it was making that weird whistling, like chirping sound. I can't even imitate that. I've never heard that sound since.
You go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, I was just gonna say I was done. I was just gonna say I've never heard something like that since we saw that.
So you guys would both say 100% Bigfoot is a thing.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
So let me ask you this: why do you think there is such a debate about this issue, about this creature? Why do you think he hasn't made himself known? Why do you think no one's ever been able to find one and bring it to the public? Is it government? What is it? Well, why do you think it's such a debate?
Do you want to answer that, Brent, or you want me to?
Yeah, sure. I'll go for it. Well, there's a lot of reasons to why no one has actually like captured one or actually, you know, had any physical evidence of one. Because some people say there's a lot of theories out there. Some of them say that it's, you know, a government experiment gone wrong. Some people say it's, you know, the Gigantopithecus, a giant ape from I don't know what age, but like everyone, the whole reason is that it's a cryptic. It's a very cryptic creature, and cryptic means it's well hidden. It's very hard to find, and that, you know, no one is really going to see it. Like same thing with like the giant pandas in China. Everyone thought they were extinct back in the 1900s, but then like I think it was the 1960s, they found like, you know, a group of them living out deep in the China forest. So it's not that it's not extinct, it's that just they're very hard to find and to locate, and we're still studying them even till this day to find out what their eating habits are, if they have migration patterns, like what do they do with their dead? Do they, like some people say, they bury their dead, and that's probably why we can't find any dead bodies of.
Oh, that's interesting.
Bigfoot.
That is a great point.
Well, you also have to imagine, if this thing lives out in the woods, whatever this creature is, it's going to have a really good sense of smell, whatever this is, and it's going to have a good sense of hearing. And if this thing dedicates its whole life to living out there, it has to have some kind of tricks and tips on how to avoid people. I don't know if it's necessarily afraid of us or if it just knows from instinct after living out in the woods to stay away from us or what the deal is, but... Either way, it's something about the creature makes it highly intelligent compared to like a bear or something.
Yeah, right. Let me ask you this: what do you guys make of that famous Bigfoot shot, the Patterson film? Is that real? Do you think is that what you guys saw, or is it something different?
Well, if you look at the Patterson creature, it actually doesn't have hair on its hands or its face either, like the creature that I saw. But
it does have it
on
its face. It looks like.
Not on a lot of its face. Some of its face, yes, but not all of its face. But I personally think it's real, and so does Brent. We've talked about it before. But the way the creature walks in the Patterson film, that's kind of how the thing walked when I saw it. But of course, like I said, it wasn't walking. It was running when I saw it.
Right.
But you could tell that whatever the arms – the thing that I thought was weird was just like the Patterson creature, the arms were extra – I guess the word I'm looking for is extra long, like it wasn't something that a person would be able to do unless they had some kind of arm extenders or something like that on. Mm-hmm.
Is there I don't know how much you guys have outside of just going and looking for them, if you've studied, you know, like the history of this or whatnot, but what is would you guys say that there's a correlation between the sightings in like the Himalayas and stuff of the abominable snowman and stuff like that? Do you think is there multiple species of Sasquatch or Bigfoot, or is there kind of just one species that people are seeing?
You could answer that one, Brent. I'm trying to upload the pictures real quick.
All right. Well, for me at least, I believe that there is different species of this same type of animal. Mm-hmm. Like as you say, like the Himalayas, there's some that live in the mountains. Their fur is different, so you know, white to blend in with camouflage and stuff like that.
Right.
And then in, you know, America, like Northern America, they're usually brownish to tannish to black. They're very different colors. Some people say they're 6 feet tall, up to like 8 feet tall. And then same thing as like down in Florida, they got the Skookum, which is a lot shorter version of a Bigfoot. Mm. It's maybe like 5 foot tall, little stocky little guy, okay. Lives in the swamps. And then they're pretty much all over the world. Like even in Australia, they say they have one, but they say it's, I think they call it the Yowie, but mm-hmm. they say it's more man than it is ape. Mm. So wow. I guess some people say that it's maybe like a Neanderthal or something like that. And same thing with the Yeren in Russia. They have that same correlation, I guess, that they think it's from a certain era.
Yeah. And
it's just...
In our ancestry.
I don't know. It's yeah, like when it comes to history, like you see like cave paintings from like people, like all the, like the Navajo Indians, they have stories that they tell, like, because, you know, their society is based on from the mouth, pretty much. They speak their teachings rather than books like what society does. Yeah. So they always hear stories passed down from generation to generation saying that there's these beings that live in the forest that, you know, you should stay away from them, that they're to be respected, that you should just leave them alone, type of thing. And that's just all over the world, that everyone has either pictures or drawings or sayings that these creatures exist.
That's crazy.
You guys, from the stories that I've heard tonight from you guys, it sounds like the Bigfoot, if you come in contact with it, would be potentially hostile. Is that a fair conclusion, or do you think it's a friendly guy?
I would say that...
Go ahead, Brent. Oh. Sorry, I'm still trying to get the pictures real quick, because I'm trying to get them from my email.
My opinion is, I guess it just depends.
Yeah.
Like any animal, like if you sneak up on, say, a bear, obviously you're gonna frighten it, and it's gonna most in a bear's instinct, depending if it's a male or a female, and if the female has a like a cow, like, you know, they're gonna either run away or they're gonna attack you.
Right.
So I have a few. The way my opinion is that I feel like they're more animalistic and
yep.
They use their instincts more than we do. So I would think in certain situations, yes, they wouldn't attack you, and they wouldn't, I guess.
Sure. And then let me ask you this one more question before we dig into Jeremy's book. What would be some good footage or evidence that someone could look up besides what we've already talked about? What would be some footage or something that somebody could look up to be like, yeah, that's kind of what a Bigfoot looks like? Is there anything that you point people towards?
I'm trying to think. There's one that came out of Florida called the Mayaca ape.
Okay.
And it looks more like an ape than a human, because there's two different types of Bigfoot. They call them napes, NAPES. Some people say those ones live primarily in the South. They resemble more of like a monkey or a like an animal that you would picture in your mind. The ones in the north, northwest, they look more like people say, more than like a wild animal.
Gotcha.
The ones, the Mayaca ape pictures, those actually are those actually look more like a monkey than a human, but those are probably some of the best pictures I've ever seen. Dude,
That thing is terrifying.
Oh, you see it?
Yeah. That's crazy.
Oh, you looked it up, Brian?
Yeah, yeah, that's really interesting.
What? How do you? What did you say? A Myaka ape?
Myaka ape. Yeah, that's fascinating.
Myakka.
Oh, so, yeah, that's from. It's named after the location. Okay.
Yeah.
So what do you? I guess what's stopping these things from just being monkeys that are in weird locations?
I'm gonna answer that one, Brent.
Could you repeat the question?
Yeah, what's stopping, like, why can't this just be considered a monkey that's in a weird location? Like, why do we have to classify this as something supernatural or paranormal or something like that? Like, why can't it just be an animal? Just a monkey, weird location.
To be honest, I've asked that question myself many times. I guess it's because, every animal, what's that?
Oh, it sounded like you got cut off there for a minute.
Oh, I guess with every animal, it starts off with lore. So I guess that's where it all went, in a different direction than saying it's the North American ape type of thing.
Yeah.
Every animal started off as, you know, like when people out here in North America went out to, you know, like Africa and stuff, and they come back in like the 1900s, just saying, "Oh, I saw these gigantic creatures. They had trunks and they had big horns, and you know, they're elephants." And then everyone out here was just like, "Well, I've never seen one, so it probably doesn't exist, and it's just a story." And until pictures came out and everything, then everyone knew that, you know, elephants and this is what that land is like, and like for Bigfoot, you know, it was all just stories. It's still been stories. Yeah, there's pictures here and there. There's fake ones. There's real ones. You can't really tell now because everyone's just using Photoshop and just pumping out whatever they want.
Yeah.
So it's kind of hard. So right now, I guess that it's still a cryptid that, you know, no one has really studied it, that it's not really a legitimate.
Yeah, it's the mystery behind it.
Yeah.
Jeremy, I want to transition really briefly. You have a book coming out in July. Tell us a little bit about it. What's it called? And then we'll dig into some questions about it. But what's this book that you got coming out?
The book, it keeps getting pushed back, obviously, because I keep getting new updates and new things I got to leave town to go investigate. So I keep having to push it back. But a number of UFO crashes from northern Nevada starting around 1950 going on to nowadays, but primarily it focuses on three UFO crashes and a UFO landing. And my book also talks about Men in Black encounters and Area 51. Some of my witnesses have been murdered since I've talked to them. Some of them have had family members that were murdered. I personally have had Hill Air Force Base, Nellis Air Force Base, and Stead Air Force Base calling my house. And on one occasion, I was actually blocked in my driveway by a government vehicle, and a soldier got out and started confronting me about my UFO research. That was last year. And what was weird was not even, I think 2 weeks ago, I saw one of the vans again outside my house, and I took their pictures. They were driving off.
Huh.
But without getting into too much details, that's probably the bare bones of the book.
Yeah, I want to ask you really quickly, because I'm reading the notes about it, and it talks a little bit about Men in Black encounters, and it says that you've personally had been confronted by one. Is that what you're talking about, the government thing, or is that something different?
Oh, that's the same thing.
Okay, so Men in Black, it's not just a movie. Like, that's a real-life thing.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Tell me about that. Like, are they really intense? Like, what was that conversation like with that official?
Well, the day before, I'd actually done. I was on the Art Bell show, and I did another interview after that. And as part of the interview, there was an individual. I guess I kind of have to tell the story about one of the incidents for this to make sense. Well, in the 60s, 1962. There was a railroad train being driven by the Nevada Northern Railway coming from the town of Ruth, Nevada, going up over towards Salt Lake City. But this train, they came around the bend and they said that something wasn't right. They could tell there was trouble up ahead because they looked like there was spikes on the tracks, or like they could just see sharp objects pointing up. Well, they hit the brakes on the train. The brake man, when I talked to him, he said he hit the brakes and the train partially derailed. And when they got to the point where they saw those weird spikes in the road, what it actually was something had come from the sky, hit the train tracks, and bounced off into the woods and flipped upside down. And he said it was a metallic object, like in the shape of almost like an oval shape. And whatever this thing was, had destroyed the tracks. And like I said, they hit the brakes, and the train partially derailed. And I guess to make a long story short, he said they could see skid marks where this thing had skidded across the ground and came to a stop, and it was wrapped up in the trees and the bushes. And using some of the military testimony, they said that when they came up to this thing, there was a hole ripped in the side, or there was like a really bad damage. And there was alien bodies inside, of course, thrown around inside the spaceship, and there was debris all over. But they said what was strange about it is there was footprints leading away from the crash. Like some of these creatures supposedly got out of the UFO and went out into the woods that are nearby. And they had almost like a search operation going on. And anyways, I don't know. There's no data available on what they actually found or if they found anything at all. This is just what the soldiers were telling me. But in the 1979, this is what, 15, 17 years later, there was a hunter who was in the area, and he thought he found a strange skeleton with a turtle skull attached to it, is what the article said in the newspaper. And I got a hold of this guy, and I was talking to him, and the very next day is when the Men in Black encounter happened, or what I call the Men in Black. I work graveyard shift at a casino here in Las Vegas.
Nice.
And I get off work around 10:30 or 11 o'clock on an average day, so I came home from work. And I pulled into my driveway. We live on a corner. And I got out of the car and I went inside the house. And I was coming back out because I got changed and I was going to go grocery shopping. And when I put my first foot in the car and I sat down on the seat, a white sedan with an unmarked white sedan whips around the corner, screeches its tires and blocks me in, almost like a like in the shape of a T. My car was in the driveway and his blows blocked me. And I was wondering what was going on. So I got out of the driver's seat and I was walking around towards the passenger side of my car, and I was going to come up behind his and, you know, go around towards the driver's door. And when I was going around the car, I remember I looked at the license plate. It was a white and silver license plate, and it said U.S. government official use only on the back of the license plate. And next thing I know, the door opens and a guy gets out, and he's in a military fatigue, like a military uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts asking me questions. It wasn't really he wasn't threatening me, but he was asking me questions about my research, like how long I had been doing it and what had I found so far. And he started asking me questions. He didn't say nothing about the turtle skull or any of that. Obviously, that's what one of the things I think he wanted to know about. But after we talked for a few minutes, I was trying kind of, you know, when something's not right, and I was trying to get out of there. But as the guy was getting back in his car, he said, "Tell your friend Nick that I said hi." And Nick's the guy that primarily does the crash book with me.
Mm-hmm.
And he got in the car and he drove a couple houses forward and stopped. I thought that was kind of strange, so I got in the car and I drove to the grocery store. Well, when I pulled out of our neighborhood, a white SUV or a van-looking car pulled out from a side street behind me and followed me all the way to the grocery store. And when I pulled into the spot up front, the van or the SUV kept on going. Well, since this happened, I contacted my friend Nick, who I knew since I was about 13 years old, and I don't know what exactly they told him, but he didn't talk to me for over a year because of this. And some of our mutual friends were saying that they threatened him, and they were telling him that he wasn't going to be able to have a career after this.
What?
And it scared him so bad. Like I said, he didn't talk to me for a year. And to this day, now that we're talking again, he still won't tell me what they told him. And he's only told, I think, two of our friends. So occasionally you'll see those, the, it looks like the second car, not the sedan, but the van looking cars. You'll see those occasionally outside of our house. My parents have seen it when they came over. I've come home from work before and they're out there. My brother actually saw them the other day, about 2 weeks ago. And when I came home, I pulled into the driveway and I got out of the car. And as soon as I got out of the car, they started up the engine and started driving off. And I took a picture with my phone as they were driving off.
Interesting. Could you send that picture to us by any chance, or we got to wait for the book?
Yeah, I can do that.
Cool. I want to touch on a couple pictures that you sent me, and then we'll be done. You sent one picture of the crash site of one of your members that's in the crash site. To me, it just looks like a hole. So what makes this a crash site exactly?
Well, that's the crash site related to the thing I told you earlier from 1962.
Right.
Well, we were given a few points on where to look for this crash site. We were told that it was really close to the interstate, but of course it wasn't the interstate back then. It was a highway, but not an interstate. And it was close to the interstate. It was close to some farms, and it was where there used to be a stream close by, and it was at the foot of a mountain.
Okay.
At the base of a mountain. And that location fit all the clues on what we were looking for. So I contacted some of the people that were actually on the train that day. There's only three people that were at the crash site that are still alive, as far as I know.
Wow.
That aren't military. And two out of the three, they told us that was the right spot, that's where we needed to be looking. They actually told us after we showed them the pictures and pointed it on a map, they were saying, yeah, that's it.
Interesting. And then real quick, this rock that you sent me, it's apparently of something that no one can tell what the rock is made of. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, what that actually is in 1977, there was a UFO that landed in a copper mine over by the town of Ruth, Nevada.
Okay.
And I guess, to make a long story short, some kind of an object landed in a copper mine, and it was spraying an oil or a gas all over the place. And the government arrived about 20 minutes later, they were saying, and they picked up the object with helicopters, and they flew off with it. And whatever that gas or that oil that was spraying out of it, I guess they pushed it into a pile with some bulldozers, and it hardened into a rock over time. Well, some of the people that worked at the mine or lived in the area, they managed to get pieces of it, and there's a lady that lives out there who actually gave me a piece of this rock. And like, so we had it tested by geologists, college professors, some people that used to work at some smelters out in the area, and no one could tell us what it is. They say it's similar to sulfur, but it's not exactly. It's not sulfur. But it's not anything that they could explain.
Right.
They said it's kind of like a hematite rock is one thing they were saying, but again, they can't definitely say that's what it is.
So it seems like if they're scientists and they come across this thing that they don't know what it is, is their interest peaked and they kind of like are now wanting to know whenever you find out, like, oh, well, if you ever find out, could you like let me know?
Oh, yeah. Well, some of the senior members of the copper mine, they want me to bring it back down there actually in October when we go to go analyze it again.
Okay. Cool.
So it's not just like your average grunt worker that's looking at it. It's actually like the bosses, and these people have master's and bachelor's degrees and pretty smart guys looking at it.
Very cool.
So what for you guys, what is the ultimate goal in these hunts? Like what would you call it? Are you just going to see yourself doing this forever? Is there a certain thing you're trying to capture that you would then say that, okay, we've done it. Like that's where we've met our goal. Whether it's like, you know, finding an actual Bigfoot and I don't know, getting some kind of footage of it that is just undeniable or I don't know, something like that. Or do you guys kind of feel like you'll always be looking for new encounters?
Well, me personally, I don't think I'll ever stop doing it. And one of the primary reasons, besides the fact that we're getting some pretty cool evidence and it's fun to go out and do this kind of thing, at least to me, it's a bonding experience for me and my brother and our two best friends beyond everything else. And I like these trips because, like I said, we kind of get out, and it's kind of like a bonding experience. I don't know. Right. What do you think, Brent?
Yeah, I usually see it as that. But for me, I don't think I'll ever stop doing it. Even if us or someone else comes along and is like, oh, we have physical, like, complete evidence that Bigfoot exists and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to stop me from going out there and trying to get evidence and, you know, catch on film or on still image or anything like that. I mean, it's just, I mean, since we've been doing it for so long, it's kind of been a part of our life.
Yeah, yeah. And me and Brian have kind of talked about doing some stuff like that. It is fun to just, even the idea of just getting out and as a group of friends, being able to go out into the woods. People do that anyways, and then they end up having those stories whether they wanted to find them or not. So it's kind of fun to have the intentions of trying to have that experience when you go out camping.
Yeah, I mean, we usually say this at the beginning of our interviews, but Dave and I are skeptics. Like, we don't believe any of this is actually true. So it's great to hear you guys talk about things that you've actually seen. But, you know, I don't really believe you. Like, I know that you've seen it, but there must be another explanation for it, you know? So I'm excited for eventually Dave and I to be able to go out there and maybe have some experiences for ourselves, because I think that's really what will convince me personally that anything like this actually exists, you know?
Yeah, of course. Of course, being a I mean, there's definitely nothing wrong with being a skeptic. I mean, of course I was when I was a kid. I didn't think ghosts or anything exists until I had my own experience.
Right.
And that usually just changes people. Like, even people that don't have any experiences, you know, they believe in this stuff. Like, they've never seen a ghost, never seen a UFO, never seen Bigfoot, never seen anything out of the ordinary. And then they believe it. But, you know, like I can respect you guys for, you know, trying to, you know, open your minds a little bit, even though you are skeptical, to, you know, try and go look for this stuff.
Well, the reason that another thing that we say at the beginning is, despite the fact that we don't have any reason to have had our worldview twisted yet, there's just seeing how many people have had that experience, it makes you want to find out what is that thing. Like, whether it's real or not, it becomes a very interesting question, because it's got to be something. Otherwise, it wouldn't have lasted this long, and it wouldn't be all over the world, you know, the different encounters. So there's something to it, but it's just getting to finding out what that is kind of an interesting thing to ask. But thank you guys so much for sharing your views, because you guys have obviously, I mean, I can't even, the two stories of the encounter with Bigfoot and then the encounter with the Men in Black, I'd be done. I'd be like, my life's a movie, I'm good to go. Like, that's enough for me.
Well,
that's crazy.
Something I'd like to tell you before you end the show, we actually have a 22-minute short film or a documentary, whatever you want to call it, that we made with the two best Bigfoot encounters that we've ever had, and it's on YouTube.
Oh, cool.
Excellent, excellent. That's what we were going to ask you, is kind of that, and also, how do people get a hold of your book?
My book, I thought it was going to come out twice by now, actually, but both times I actually started having different witnesses come forward where I have to leave town to go look at whatever they were telling me or
mm-hmm.
things like that. So I keep pushing it back. Right now, I was going to send it out in July, but now it's looking like I have to push it back again.
Okay. So we'll keep us posted. We'll mention whenever it does happen. We'll mention it on the show.
Yeah.
And also, if you send us the link for the YouTube, we'll include that too, so that people can kind of find their way into that stuff.
Right. Okay. Yeah. We'll post all of the pictures that you've sent us about the stuff that we've talked about. And we'd love to have you guys back on in the future to talk a little bit more about UFOs and those encounters that you've had.
Oh, definitely.
That'd be great.
Yeah, that'd be great.
We actually have a lot more stories. Like, so we investigate something called the Sand Yeti in Nevada. Mm-hmm. We do all kinds of ghost hunts, monster hunts. We do a lot of things that are out of the ordinary.
Great. Awesome. That's man. We'll be in touch, and thanks so much for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Later.
You too.
Big thanks to the Bigfoot's Pad Paranormal team, Jeremy and Brent, for joining us in the Starry Time. Dave, thoughts, concerns, feelings?
That was all I needed to hear. You know when you're a little kid and you hear your grandpa telling a story? And you're just captivated. That's what it felt like for me on this one.
They didn't sound that old.
No, my point is that he's such a good storyteller. Like, he had me, like, in the stories. Like,
he was a good storyteller. It's true.
Like, his recounting of these events were, like, were just great.
Hey, the good news is this, Dave. We will be posting all of the pictures and the whatnots and the here goes. We'll be posting all that stuff on the website, like, right here. Like, as you see on starrytime.weebly.com/podcast, you see the interview. If you just scroll down just a bit, you'll see all the pictures and all that good stuff.
I will take a look, Bran. Thanks.
Yeah, you're so welcome, man. Hey, we tried to get Steve, and we lost him. We missed him.
He's an artist.
I've said it before. He's an artist.
He also lives in New York City like I do.
Yeah.
And when you get out there and your phone goes down, you're out of options.
Listen, he is – tell me if this doesn't describe an artist, Dave. Are you ready? You get so wrapped up in your work that you forget to charge your phone.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Every time.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's an artist, and that's what Steve is. But he still was able to do the news, Lord willing. And so we're thankful for that. News was great.
Steve, thank you, Steve.
Hey, Dave, we got a few different things that are available now, including we've got a Facebook page now. We've got a Twitter page now. And
Twitter is at Starry with one R, of course.
Yeah, right.
Starry Time Pod, because it's too long to say podcast. Yeah. There's a character limit on there. I don't know why there's a character limit on there, but there is. And they're just like the government, they're trying to keep us from get to keep all of the hard-earned letters that we put in our name, and they're like, you only get to keep 15% or 15 of the letters.
It's messed up, man. You can find us on the Facebook, facebook.com/StarryTimePodcast. They do not limit you on there, so
They're about free will.
Yeah. One other thing that we're working on, Dave, is a YouTube page where we'll be able to see little snippets of but you'll be able to hear little snippets of the show. So just all sorts of different social medias and websites.
We're hooking into the cloud. Like, that's what we do here. Well, listen, we don't want to be left behind.
I don't want anyone to, I don't know how to say it, you know, get mad at us because we've got enough of that.
Yeah, I was going to say, for any other reason than our name and our intro song.
Yeah, listen, we're used to that.
If it's any other reason than that, then we're going to try and fix it.
Yeah. So, hey, Dave, I wanted to point this out real quick. We're still getting flack about the name, and we're working on it. But
we're working on the flack, but not doing anything.
Yeah. But we do want to thank – we got a couple of really nice emails this week, including a guy who sent me a book. Because he loved the podcast so much. Isn't that nice? People, if you just get past the name and the song, maybe you'll get to enjoy it.
I think that people need to swallow their pride every once in a while. I mean, plug your ears at the beginning if that's what it takes.
Yeah.
And plus, this is an audio podcast.
Yeah.
You don't even have to – you have the one time when you click subscribe – that's the one time that it has to hurt your feelings that there's one R. Yeah. After that, you just click – what's the new
just
episode?
Just get over it. You know what? This is quality content. Just ask the
it's
guy who sent me
content.
A book.
It's about the content. Yeah. It's not about the content of the spelling of the name. It's about the content of the podcast.
In the words of the person who commented on Michael Heiser's blog post about us, we're goofy, and we get it. We get it.
Okay.
But it's about the content. That's all. That's all I want to say.
Some of the content's goofy, but the content's good.
Yeah, it's good. Listen, there's about 10 minutes up front and 10 minutes on the back end. It's weird as crap. But the stuff in the middle is gold. So
yeah,
if you can get past me and Dave, you're really going to get a podcast.
It's like a stale Oreo. The cream never goes bad, but sometimes the outer layers get a little stale.
Gross. I don't want to hear that.
But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, hey, we'll get over time, me and Brian might get stale. On the out in the end, but the middle.
we're four podcasts in, and I'm already sick of us. So
yeah, but the middle will always be. It doesn't go stale.
Dave, tell people about the other podcast we're working on, and we might be launching it soon.
Oh, I didn't know this was it.
Yeah, I figured if we announce it, we might be more prone or privy to do it.
Ever since last week, where Michael Heiser let us off with his podcast,
yeah.
every week now we're gonna in the podcast.
Well, we gotta give the listeners what they want, which is teasers.
More podcasts, more options to not like us or like us. Okay, so me and Brian are big fans of the show The Wonder Years. It's the best show that's ever been. It's got a Savage in it, which if that wasn't reason enough right there, I don't know what's wrong with you. But there's also someone with the name Winnie Cooper that is just unstoppable.
You're getting weird, but
okay. Well, also the dad is
okay.
In the show.
Good.
The dad of the show. Well, all the characters have a reason or a reason enough to watch the show. But then altogether, it's ridiculous. It's art. It's the biggest. It's a magnum opus.
Oh, okay. So what are we doing? What are we doing with it?
We are doing personalized commentaries from Dave and Bran, which we encourage you to watch the episodes with us. Turn the audio off on your Netflix or however you're watching it, and then substitute that with the audio that we'll provide, where we will add in our comments and commentaries, and you will learn things because me and Brandon are experts.
It's similar to when you buy a TV show on a box set and they have the audio commentary where you watch the episode and they talk over it. Same basic idea, except we're not famous, nor are we on the show, but we do have a lot to say about it.
Yeah, it's from the it's made from the fans by the fans.
So it's called the Wondercast. We'll be posting it soon. We'll keep you guys updated because, like we said earlier, like there's more to us than just aliens. And we want you guys to know that
there's more to us than meets the eye.
Good
or
one.
The ear, more than meets the ear, because this is an audio podcast.
Yeah. Hey, Dave, thanks so much for hanging out with me, man.
Like I said, Brian, this is why I do the podcast. It's the only way I can hang out with you still.
Yeah. Hey, I guess we'll go from here and just say from Greenville, South Carolina,
David Riondo. How did you want me to?
I don't know how many times we got to do this. I say from Greenville, South Carolina. You say from New York City, and then we say goodbye.
Oh, I thought you were going to say your name after it. Okay.
You want to try it again?
Yeah.
Hey.
Hey. How's it going?
From Greenville, South Carolina.
And from New York City.
This is the Star Time Podcast. Steve. Bye.
Bye.
We'll get it one day.
I thought it would have been fun if, like, we each said who we were.
Oh. Hey, from Greenville, South Carolina.
And from New York City.
I'm Brand.
And
from Greenville, South Carolina.
And from Brooklyn.
I'm Brand.
And I'm David.
And this was the Story Time Podcast. Oh, dude, that was a good one.